Good evening, everybody. We are broadcasting from some scary Blair Witch-style forest because turns out you walk around New Jersey looking for the BPRD headquarters, you get lost.
Millicent Oriana, culture expert. While seeking to unlock the secrets of all fandoms, she is exposed to an overload of every aspect of pop culture. Now, when asked a question about a piece of popular culture, she becomes curious. Now hosting a podcast and joined by amazing guests, she seeks to find answers and find a way to live off her talents and to make a fun podcast.
I've got more questions for you today, Jacob. Hope you're ready.
Okay.
And we are back. I am Millicent Oriana, and today we are doing part two of Castle Eater, or as I like to call it, Nazis Ate My Neighbors. Today, I am joined by
Jacob Urban
and
Sophia Bucca. Don't know why I said it like that.
Yeah, she's my producer, so she can say it however she wants. We are kicking this episode off, and if you remember from the last episode, some crazy shit was going down, and basically the U.S. and a few Wehrmacht soldiers and the Austrian resistance all teamed up, and we're going to take the castle, and the SS was gearing up to take it too.
Yeah, just to remind everybody, this was near the end of the war, so...
The war was already over.
Yeah, the war was pretty much already over. It's in that weird gap of time before Germany officially surrendered and when Hitler killed himself.
Yeah, so basically the Death Star supernovaed, but, you know.
But yeah, Darth Vader's still floating around in space.
Yeah, basically imagine like the Emperor was on the Death Star the first time it supernovaed. And Darth Vader was just floating around in space. Kind of like that.
I mean, even that's not really an apt description. Because, well, okay. If I'm remembering right, I believe it was...
it was the guy that's in charge of the armed force. Goering.
Oh, it was Goering.
Yeah, it was Goering.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess he could have been Darth Vader in that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of was. I mean... Like, none of them were competent. Like, none of them were really that competent.
No,
like,
none of them
that's
were.
That's what I've learned. Like, none of the Nazis were competent. They were good at, like, you know, convincing a bunch of people with empty promises. Which, I mean, okay, if the former president of the United States has taught us anything, you can literally just make promises like a kid trying to get elected class president. Where they're just like, I'm going to extend recess and we're going to never do homework. And kid doesn't have that power.
Every day is going to be pizza day.
Yeah, he can lie and he can say that dish and he can get elected based on that, but it doesn't mean it's true.
No, yeah, it's definitely not true.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing about the Nazis. It's like they were never competent in anything other than, like, they built jet engines. I think that was, like, the one thing they were good at.
Yeah. And cars.
Okay, yeah, actually, I will say that the VW Bug was a decent car, but, that's about all I can say about any Nazis being competent. Oh, and Fanta is delicious. Yeah, just so everybody knows, Fanta was totally made by Coca-Cola because it was illegal to sell Coca-Cola in Germany because of an embargo. But Coca-Cola was like, well, we got all those factories, and that's money to be made. And we don't give a shit because we're going to continue a pattern of abuse throughout our entire... Which, it's funny, I drink Coca-Cola all the time. I hate them for their practices, though. I think they should stop polluting with plastic. And that's the thing. I'm not a hypocrite because I do hate them. But, you know, just let everybody know Fanta is, it was originally a drink made for the Third Reich. And, don't get me wrong. If anything tasted like Coke, I would, you know, I'd buy that instead. But there's no such thing as ethical consumption in capitalism. Everything you get is going to either be a product of slave labor or it's going to be poison.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good. So I guess the main thing to remember is that there was Krobot and Chuchkovich. Yeah. They were the two that were basically given notes to written in English to, and they were instructed to give them to the first Americans they came across.
Yeah.
So, one of them found the guy he hooked up with the Austrian resistance and...
the other one hooked up with the Americans.
Well, he's still on... Yeah, he got there in that day. So, I mean, he bicycled 40 miles in a day. Yeah, and he made it by nightfall, essentially. So he, like, probably left mid-morning, and then he made it by nightfall. So he must have been flying.
Oh, yeah, he must have been. I also do think it's kind of crazy that, like, when you look at Europe and its size, like, the United States does the same thing where, like, each state is, like, slightly different.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird because, like, Austria and Germany, but then you have, like, New Mexico and Texas, which are completely different places, like, completely different places.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I mean, it's just so crazy. Because, like, you can go to New York, and they think that we talk, like, with really weird accents. And, like, we think that they're silly or they're, like, weird food and stuff like that. It's hilarious.
But, you know, it's all normal to them.
Yeah, it's all normal to them. It's literally like a German person going into France, where it's like, oh, yeah, they're so different. It's like, yeah, that's us traveling to New York. It's weird.
Yeah, for any of our European listeners.
Yeah, or Asian listeners, it is just, it's nuts. Like, it is nuts how far everything is from one another here and how different everything
is. Well, okay, I mean, on the East Coast, you know.
Oh, yeah, all those states are really close to one another.
Can I just jump in and I say that I saw a diagram that I think split the United States into, like, about, like, if it could be split into countries, it'd be probably, like, five countries or so. Like, basically, like, the Northeast would be about one country, and, like, the Gulf Coast. Then
Southwest. Yeah. Parts of the Southwest. Yeah. Other parts would be part of other things.
Yeah, because the Southwest really, like, honestly, I had culture shock when I visited Massachusetts. About as much as when I visited England. Like, I'm not going to say that, you know, every state is from one another is as different as every country is from each other, obviously. But yeah, I just wanted to say that.
That's the thing. It's kind of fascinating. Texas was more different to me than Mexico. That's kind of the weird thing. Like, Mexico was more like familiar to me than Texas was.
Well, I mean, we have, you know, we're in New Mexico, so our culture is really influenced by Mexican culture.
Yeah, we're a lot like Texas, but we didn't kick them out because we wanted slaves.
They just drew a random border. I just wanted to say that.
Oh, I know.
In like a place that like was pretty much had families and everything, and then just like, and you can't talk to each other anymore.
Yeah, I know, and it's pretty ridiculous. Like, it's also ridiculous how like the border would just change like every week back then.
Yeah.
Like, there were places like Tucumcari, New Mexico, where it's like, are we Mexico? Are we Texas? Are we New Mexico? What are we this week?
Yep.
What are we this week?
Yeah, New Mexico has a really interesting history, and we're going to go into it in some future episodes.
Yeah. Just wanted to throw that out there for you people. A little dose of America for you.
All right. So, the guys that were met in Tyrol, Krobot, he met with Joseph Gengel, who was the head of the Austrian resistance, and then they ran into John Lee, who was on his way to the castle.
I like John Lee, because that totally sounds like the protagonist in a war movie.
Well, John Lee. So, it's a nickname. I believe his real name was Jack.
Jack and John are synonymous one another.
His
real name was John, probably.
Yeah, it's one or the. It's either his real name was Jack or his real name was John, and because I was finding some discrepancies in that.
Yeah, well, Jack is a common nickname for people named John. Like, it's really, really common for them to call people like John F. Kennedy. A lot of people used to refer to him as Jack Kennedy.
Yeah, and there is another soldier in this U.S. soldier who, his name I believe is also John or was also Jack. So that it does help to differentiate him. So, it's always going to be John Lee, or I'm just going to refer to him as Lee. So, yeah, they're on their way to the castle. They came across a bunch of SS dudes trying to set up a roadblock, and they scared them. But it was pretty clear that the SS was planning to attack the castle at this point. And then back at the castle, the French prisoners had requested an FS officer, Kurt Siegfried Schrader, to take over the castle defenses. He befriended the French prisoners because he was convalescing there while healing from a American bombing raid where he got injured. And in return, he wanted his wife and children to
go into the castle.
Yeah, go to the castle for protection. And that should catch us up. So when Lee and Gengel arrived at the castle, the prisoners were pretty disappointed because this was about 24 guys and a tank.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, they weren't very happy about the size of their rescue effort.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a huge force.
Yeah, they had expected an entire company of soldiers to rescue them. But they did still greet the soldiers warmly and thankful that someone had at least shown up.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, the U.S. isn't really known for helping people when it comes to war like that a lot of the time. They say they will, but then when they get what they want, they go, okay, yeah, we'll help you. And they make that jerking off motion with their hand.
Yeah. All right. So when Lee and Gangle got there, they quickly realized there was no way to evacuate the prisoners without more vehicles. So they decided to stay for the night until reinforcements could arrive. Lee ordered his men to take defensive positions around the castle and had the tank nicknamed Besotin Jenny park in the main entrance. With a solid strategy and the castle's thick walls, everyone began to relax and settle down for the night. Now at about 11 p.m., this shit hit the fan. The hillside surrounding Eater lit up with gunfire from advancing SS members. They harassed the castle all night long, scouting for a weakness, but all they've managed to really do is chip away at the stone walls of the castle.
So it was a really well-built castle.
Yeah. Yeah, it was solid. This was a legitimate castle. Yeah, pretty much the prisoners, all they did was, I'm trying to sleep. I guess I just gotta avoid the windows.
Yeah.
And they just pretty much stayed down all night.
Yeah, there are neighborhoods like that in Albuquerque. I lived in one.
Yeah, where the walls are just super thick and, well, stay away from the windows. There's gunshots.
There's gunshots. Stay away from the window.
This is what it's like to live in America sometimes in some places.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. I think there's a neighborhood in every city in America that's like that, where everybody has to stay down when they hear gunshots.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, on the dawn of May 5th, the nature of the battle would change as an anti-tank round was fired from the forest and hit the Besotin Jenny and blew it to pieces.
Damn.
By chance, the only person in the tank was a radio repairman fixing the tank's radio, and he managed to escape unharmed.
Damn. They should have been riding around in that guy, it sounds like.
Yeah, they, again, Nazis are terrible shots, as it turns out.
Yeah, sounds like it. He blew up a tank, but he didn't even kill the dude in it.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Another anti-tank round was fired into the castle itself and destroyed a room and most of the floor it was on. So, good against machine gun fire, not so good against tank rounds.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
With barely enough time to recover, the defenders looked out to the forest and saw over 100 SS soldiers rushing up towards them, determined to take the castle. As the two columns of SS soldiers began advancing towards the lowest wall and the main gate of the castle, its defenders had made their way to the rooftop and began to fire. Because remember, when the guards left, they left all of their guns and, ammunition and just... They didn't take anything with them.
So they were pretty decently equipped.
Yeah, they... As equipped as a prison would be.
Yeah, so they didn't have, artillery and stuff, but they had, guns and...
Yeah, they had some guns.
They had some grenades and stuff. And
they did have ammunition for them.
And, yeah. Yeah, guns, ammunition, some grenades. Because, again, they had to defend the place, so...
Yeah.
They might have even had some mortars.
Maybe. Now, this was the first time Wehrmacht soldiers had opened fire on SS units in opposing sides of a battle. So that is what makes this historically significant.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, the French prisoners had also began to open fire, including Jean Barata, former Premier Paul Reynard, Michael Clemenceau, and even the French fascist nationalist François de La Roque opened fire with his rifle, which must have seemed really strange to the others involved, what was already a very strange battle.
Yeah, that is so weird. It's like...
Because, yeah... I was finding disputed evidence whether he was just a right-wing nationalist or also a fascist. So I'm not quite sure what that was, what he was. Any French listeners might be able to tell me.
I mean, if he was a right-wing nationalist, that's a thin membrane between fascist.
Yeah, but there is a slight difference.
Yeah, but it's like a piece of cellophane keeping them apart.
So the defenders were inflicting casualties to the SS. They still held the advantage, though, because of their superior numbers and firepower. Because, again, this is 35, 45 people defending this castle against over 100 SS members.
Damn.
So yeah, they were outnumbered. Now, shortly into the battle, Joseph Gengel, he was the Nazi who became very disillusioned and
wound up being Austrian resistance head.
Yeah. He was early in the battle, he was shot down by a sniper's bullet while he was trying to save Paul Renard. He died before he hit the ground. He was dead before he even knew it.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, those fucking sniper rifles the Germans had were fucking, like, really impressive.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of damage done.
And, you know, he was trying to save a former French prime minister.
That's pretty noble.
Yeah. Like, if anything could redeem him, I mean, it would take more than that one act, but,
you know, yeah, he'd have to be, like, Scar Guy from Archer.
What is this?
You know what it is, Fritz. So shut your schnitzel hole and disarm it.
Oh, I get it. The German guy, Mr. Scar, must be the bad guy. Well, you know how I got this scar? Saving a Jewish girl from a gang of skinheads.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Und so Kraus gets a curb party.
Wow. Now I feel like an asshole.
Your words.
Yeah. Like, you know, there's no really reforming or redeeming a Nazi.
Yeah, not usually.
Yeah.
I mean, what if the guy was like, oh, I killed Hitler with anal dilators? Like those old butt plugs they used to use for... Did you ever hear about that, Josh?
No.
Okay, we got to do a whole episode about this, but I will say there was a point in American medicine in the 1800s and early 1900s where they would just jam, like, hold crazy people down or people they said were crazy, and then they would force these, like, giant metal butt plugs that were, like, big into them.
1 to 4 inches.
Yeah, like one and a half to 4 inches were how big these things were in diameter.
My God, that is horrifying.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just imagining that. Okay, that sounds like it would make people more mentally ill if they were mentally ill and you did that.
Yeah. Oh my God. Why is everything like involving psychiatry and the study of the mind in the 1800s so goddamn scary?
Because they didn't know what they were doing.
It was considered, I believe, bad practice from like the mid 1800s in a lot of places till like 1940 something to hug babies. Do you know about that?
No.
Yeah, people grew up not being hugged, which also explains a lot about World War One.
Yeah, say you shouldn't hug them too tight.
No, but they were like,
hug your kids.
Yeah, they said physical contact was bad for babies, so they would have mothers touch them as little as possible, keep them in their
baby cages. I've seen those. I've seen the baby cages.
Well, yeah. Well, actually, those are different. But I mean, yeah, cribs. I was gonna say, which is it's most a much nicer baby cage, but not if you're stuck there all day.
Yeah, I've seen baby cages though. They used to have like these weird baby cages, but they were to get babies fresh air and sun. Because they used to think that the sun was good for everybody, and then we found out it's kind of good, but not a lot.
It is also trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, if I were a baby, it would be fun to be in a baby cage, I think, because I'd be like, oh, look, I'm like 100 feet up.
Yeah, but I mean, again, it looks like chicken wire that those things are made out of. I don't get into hot air balloons because I don't want to put my life in the fucking wicker basket. Like, seriously, I think a wicker basket's not a good enough foundation to carry a person. So I damn well don't want chicken wire ever supporting me.
Yeah, this is horrifying.
Yeah, we'll talk about all these horrible things in another episode.
Yeah, okay. So, by noon, the battle was turning in the favor of the SS. The Band of Defenders couldn't match their firepower or their foes and had to retreat further into the castle. Now, when we left off, Zvonimir Chuchkovich on May 3rd, he was going all out riding his bike to the town of Innsbruck, which was roughly 40 miles away. When he had gotten there, he had come out with the 103rd Infantry Division, where he met Major John T. Kramers. So this is the other John. Okay. So from this point, if I'm referring to John Lee, I'm just going to call him Lee, and John Majors as Majors.
And Majors is the guy that's the head of the Riders of Rohan, right?
Not Major, Kramer, sorry.
Kramer's the head of the Riders of Rohan, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Now, this was super fortunate. When Kramer's asked his superiors for permission to go to either, they denied his request as it was out of his jurisdiction. So, yeah, Chuchkovich, he was found like a really good person to find for this, because being the total badass, Kramers decided that he was gonna go anyways.
Nice.
Yeah, he's just like, I don't care what you say.
See, I don't think cops should do that,
But I like when, like, soldiers do that, and it's not, like a massacre thing, where I don't care what you say, I'm gonna shoot him anyway, and, like, I don't think that's good. But when they're like, I don't care what you say, I'm gonna go fight them, it's like, all right, that's cool.
This mission is, like, important for me to do.
Yeah, I'm saving innocent people.
Yeah, like, what we're doing over here, we can wait to do that. This is kind of immediate. Now, unfortunately, the road to Eater was full of fleeing refugees, which made travel slow, and at one point they were stopped by an artillery bombardment. It took Kramer and his men 2 days to reach Wirgl, which is about 5 miles from Eater. So Chuchkovich, he rode his bike the 40 miles in one day, and it's taken him 2 days to go 35.
Damn.
Yeah. So yeah, it took him that long to get to Wirgl. They were unsure if there were going to be any survivors left at the castle at this point. So this is back on May 5th.
Damn.
So this was the night basically before, well, early morning night, sometime in the 1 to 3 a.m. I think area. That's when the SS opened fire on them initially. So they've been fighting this battle all day now. Kramer's did try to reach Lee over radio, but was unable to get a reply. And if you remember, the tank's radio wasn't working correctly, and then it got blown up.
Yeah.
So that's why he couldn't get him over radio. Unsure of what to do, a local suggested Kramer's try to use a telephone to get a hold of the castle. And amazingly, this actually worked. They just called him with a phone.
Oh my god, I could just imagine that call. Hello?
Yeah, like we're in the middle of a firefight.
Who the fuck is calling right now?
Yeah. Now, Kramer's on the call, he did inform the defenders that he was on his way to rescue them, essentially.
So don't surrender.
Yeah. If you surrender, they're going to kill you.
Yeah, we're coming.
This news was very good for the defenders because at this point they were out of ammo and could only retreat further into the castle. They were preparing to fight to the death with bayonets and whatever melee weapons they could find.
Nice. That's pretty dope.
Yeah. And, you know, again, this is like, you know, at the time women weren't allowed to fight. Yeah, no, the women were kind of getting like, we got to get involved in this too at this point.
And anybody who's in a metal band, we are totally giving you like source material for an entire song right here.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm surprised Iron Maiden hasn't written a song like this.
Yeah. So they were getting ready to throw down with whoever came through the doors. The SS was at the gates, and they were positioning an anti-tank cannon to blow apart the heavy wooden gates when one of the Wehrmacht soldiers on the roof cried out, "It's the Americans." And that's when, as Kramer's and his soldiers became visible to the horror and disbelief of the remaining SS soldiers.
Yeah.
Basically, this is the Riders of Rohan showing up.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah. The SS soldiers scattered and ran for the trees of the surrounding forest. At 3 p.m. of May 5th, 1945, the Battle of Castle Eater had ended. 2 days later, Germany would officially surrender. In the aftermath of the battle, roughly 100 SS soldiers were captured. The remaining Wehrmacht soldiers were placed into prison of war camps. The French VIPs moved to secure locations before being flown home on May 10th. For his service at Castle Eater, Lee received the Distinguished Service Cross. Joseph Gengel, the only defender to actually die during the battle, he was honored as an Austrian national hero and had a street in Wirgl named after him.
Okay, so, you know, if any Nazi has to have a street named after him, I guess...
He died doing a good thing.
He died doing a good thing, so he gets the street named after him.
The castle itself had a brief but failed period as a hotel, and is now owned by a private individual and unfortunately no longer open to the public. And there you go. That's the Battle of Castle Eater.
Yeah, to me, I find the most fascinating thing about it just the fact that it teaches you this continuous lesson. Number one, don't serve fascists. Number two, if you wind up being, you know, stuck in it, like you get conscripted into the, you know, Japanese Imperial Army or the Wehrmacht or something like that, don't have any true allegiance then. The minute they surrender or the war's over or whatever, don't be like, oh yeah, we got to just keep fighting this shit. Be like, all right, yeah, I'm out. Peace.
Yeah, you know. like a lot of these guys, you could just really half-ass your job.
I mean, I know about those Imperial Japanese holdouts, the ones that were like, you know, the crazy guy that was killing people in the Philippines till like the 70s.
Yeah.
And like a lot of those poor dudes weren't even able to reassimilate into Japanese society because the government wouldn't do anything to help them.
Yeah.
Like it was literally this thing where like there was this poor dude that was like ethnically Japanese. He was born in Taiwan, but he was a Japanese, like he was a Japanese person.
Yeah.
And when he showed up in Japan after they found him in the 70s, they were like, nah, dude, you're from Taiwan. And he's like, I'm like 60 years old and I've never been like in Taiwan where it wasn't occupied by Japan. Like, I don't speak the language. They just like sent him there and he wound up like homeless in Taiwan.
That's horrible.
Yeah, they did that all to all those guys. And it's like, that's why you don't have any loyalty to that kind of system. If you wind up forced into it, don't have any loyalty.
Yeah.
And if you have loyalty to it and that's why you joined up, you're an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah, just like most like fascists.
Yeah. Best way to deal with a fascist leader? Dynamite. Spain's first astronaut taught us that.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't remember that guy's name, but like I've seen that picture of his car flying through the air, and I saw that movie, The Last Circus, and I love that imagery of that car just flying through the air.
With a very bad man inside it.
Yeah, with a very bad man who got turned into liquid as soon as he fucking hit the... Probably didn't even hit anything. He probably got turned into liquid as he went up into the air.
Didn't they dig a Wile E. Coyote tunnel under the street and fill it up with dynamite?
Yeah, they dug a Wile E. Coyote pothole and filled it up with dynamite. That's how they blew him up.
And didn't this like land on top of a 3-story building or something like that? Yeah,
landed upside down inside a shopping mall.
Yeah.
How many blocks away?
Like 3 blocks away, 4 blocks away. Like this thing went flying through the air.
There are pictures of it happening.
Yeah, and if any of my Spanish listeners like, you know about that at all or like have any relatives that ever told you like the story that saw it, I would love firsthand account of like that. Because I'm sure it was pretty crazy to watch. It was like, whoa, while you watch that thing just fly through the air.
Yeah, so, you know, the major lessons of this are, you know, Nazis are incompetent and...
Can't shoot.
And, you know, some of them were quite a bit cowardly.
Yeah, and don't become a fascist. Don't submit to fascist ideology. I mean, you know... If you want to call yourself fiscally conservative, whatever. Like, I'm fine with that. I'm still going to disagree with you. But, like, don't think you need to kill everybody of a certain group. That's not cool. That never works.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's not, like, that's definitely a red flag.
Yeah, it's, like, such a red flag. It never works for anybody. It's, like, the dumbest thing ever. And, I mean... Like, that's the thing. Like, the United States, we need to take more accountability for slavery and Indian genocide. Oh, Native American genocide.
Don't be a proponent of genocide.
Don't be a proponent of a genocide. If you join up with a left-wing group that starts progressively becoming more right-wing and more proponent of genocide, that's time to get out.
Yeah, that group's not healthy for you to be in anymore.
Like the Young Turks, right?
Yeah, like the Young Turks or, like, you know, certain communist parties and stuff like that, like... I mean, again, I don't disagree with the idea of a socialist revolution, but when you go, hey, we're going to turn this country completely agrarian and we're just going to kill anybody with glasses with pickaxes, yeah, you've gone completely insane.
Yeah.
Like, that's totally what a communist revolution is not. I mean, the Soviets. Soviets did a terrible job of, like, almost everything other than, like, tech, like, analog tech and stuff. Their policies were not good when it came to human rights and stuff.
Well, I mean, a lot of them were even just self-defeating, too.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, in terms of, like, economic policies and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing fell apart because of the commissaries created their own, like, black market and basically became, like, a capitalist system. And Gorbachev became aware of it and was just like, okay... This obviously isn't working.
And, yeah.
And it's like, you gotta care more about people.
And fair listener, if your listeners want examples of socialism done right, there's tons of stuff that was done in Spain during the Civil War and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Anarcho-syndicalism, 1920s.
Oh, yeah. But then you also have the Zapatista movement in Mexico, which apparently illiteracy and stuff in that region went down like exponentially.
I mean, you know, it's one of those things where if you're just all black and white, communism's bad. Like, there were bad things in it, especially in how the Soviet Union practiced it. But there were also good things in it.
Yeah, I mean, look at Castro, how, like, he sucked. Apparently, his daughter, though, is doing really great.
Yeah.
Or his niece. I don't remember whose daughter it is. It's either Castro or his brother's daughter. But the one that's running Cuba now, she's apparently doing great. Other than the United States sending, like, influencers to try to start another, you know, revolution there, which...
Can we stop?
Yeah, can we stop doing that? Can we please stop doing that? Can the United States stop just fucking with other countries for like 10 minutes? Like literally, just go a year without fucking up the world.
Yeah.
Like, I love that too. It's like, oh, we got Trump out of office, so we could have another asshole that just wants to fuck up another country that he doesn't fucking run.
Yeah, I mean... You know, there were a couple good things Biden did in the beginning, but slowly but surely he's becoming a massive disappointment.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, the Right to Repair Act. That was good. That's the one that allowed farmers to work... Like, you used to have to get your tractor repaired by John Deere.
Yeah, by John Deere, yeah.
And now the farmers can repair that stuff themselves.
Yeah, Right to Repair is great. I mean, that's the thing, though. The student loan debt stuff needs to go away. We do need universal health care.
Yes. Desperately.
I mean, there are still people in other parts of the world that don't believe we have to pay like practically everything for our medicine.
Oh yeah, you might want to give the story of how you had a bill go down by like 95% because
it was more than that. Okay, so I got x-rays and a bunch of other stuff because I had blood poisoning, and I didn't have insurance at the time, so I went to the university hospital here in New Mexico, which actually a pretty good hospital.
Great hospital.
And I went there and it wound up being like $900 my bill for the x-rays and all that stuff. And I told them, I don't have a job. I don't have any income. And they were like, oh, okay, well, can you get $25? It was like, how the hell does that work? That $25 is fine, but you wanted $900? Like, I watched Sesame Street. I know how to count. What the hell?
Well, I mean, it doesn't make sense by any means, and there is no rationalizing it. You basically, it doesn't need to be that expensive.
Yeah.
Like, we pay so much for healthcare here, and it's just ridiculous.
It's also nightmarish how much progressively more fascist the Western world became in an attempt to destroy communism.
Yeah.
It's like, look, I don't agree with communism completely. But I definitely don't agree with fascism. If we had to pick one, we definitely lost the Cold War.
Yeah, I am not a fan of fascism either, suffice it to say. You know, again, like I said, there are some good things about communism, but...
You know. Yeah.
There are some things that the USSR did that...
Are unforgivable.
That, and they were also just incompetent.
They were incompetent, that's true, but I mean...
Like, decisions they made were not very good all the time. Like, they made some good decisions, they lasted for quite a long time, but, yeah, there were some decisions that were ultimately made that were very poor choices, like, in trying to keep your union together.
Yeah. I also think it's funny how, like, they elected a crazy guy, so we elected an even crazier guy. Well, they didn't elect him, but, you know, the party picked him. I mean, that's the thing. The goddamn party elected Brezhnev, who was apparently nuts. That was why they did it. And then we elected Reagan, because he was nuts. I mean, the man was, he was a spokesman for, like, the actors union in some cleaning product. And we decided to make him our president.
Yeah.
Based on that.
You know, we almost ended the world multiple times because of it.
Yeah.
It's when you think about how close we came, it's pretty amazing that we did come out of the Cold War without destroying the planet.
Oh, I know. Both sides.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Both sides.
You can make an argument that fascism made it possible. The fascist environment in the United States made it possible for misinformation to proliferate by companies giving, like sugar companies and gas companies, and that we're in a worse mess of global warming due to that.
Well, I know all the banana republics that were created to fight communism. I mean, the fact that Italy and Nicaragua and like a few of those other countries got like Japan got a total boot shoved up their ass by the United States with fascism in an attempt to just basically keep the commies at bay. It's ridiculous. It's like, find a better system.
Yeah. Like, you could have tried to actually make them democracies.
Yeah.
That
could have actually worked.
I mean, you know, ultimately capitalism is going to kill us all. Yeah. Like, it's going to end the planet, but...
Yeah, it's going to end the planet, or we got to end it. So,
it's getting down to the wire.
Yeah, it really is. Thankfully, 3D printing's a thing.
Yep.
And with any luck, we'll eventually be like Death Stranding, where we just need materials.
Yeah. You know, I grew up watching Star Trek, and, you know, we have so much Star Trek technologies at this point. Like, you know, you remember the data pads? Those are just tablets.
That is true.
Replicators. We got 3D printers.
That thing that could tell you if you were dying, we have those Novo rings now.
Yeah.
You know those cell phone type things that they have? There's
a communicator.
Well, no, the one that like flips.
The old school.
Old school one from the original series. Yeah.
The original flip phones back in the 90s would flip down instead of up. And then people didn't really like them. People were like, what gives? And then some designer was like, oh, I mean, look how they do it on Star Trek. I think everybody's used to that. And whether or not that's exactly the reason why, it was obviously uncertain because, you know, you're working with counterfactuals and we only have one planet, but...
The whole reason that those smartwatches are so popular is because everybody wanted a wrist communicator.
Yeah.
Like, we all want one.
Yeah, yeah. There's no real reason why, but it's cool, damn it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. There's nothing wrong with consumerism. We just got to find a way to like be able to buy our Jordans without them being made with slave labor. Even if a pair of Jordans winds up costing, you know, like, they shouldn't cost more. That's the other thing. These dudes are bilking us for too much.
Oh, yeah. There are pairs of Jordans that go for thousands of dollars. Like, it did not cost anywhere near that much to manufacture that shoe.
Oh, I know. And it's like, oh, but it's the art. No, don't even pull that.
No, because I had liked Jordans for quite a while. I've transitioned more into skate shoes recently because they're just comfortable. And, you know, a good pair of Jordans, that's going to last you like 5 years. But I'm not spending $600 on a pair of shoes.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, like my shoes, I want them to last me like a good 2 or 3 years before I have to replace them.
And I also love the CEO of Nike being like, and I mean, the CEO of a lot of companies like Apple and stuff like that, where it's like, they're just like, well, we'd have to raise our prices if we manufactured them in better conditions. And it's like, well, no, you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't. No, you already overpriced them.
You're already charging us like $900 for something that cost you like $50 to make.
Now, I will, like, tech-ish. Okay, I'm sure that is a bit costlier to manufacture. But yeah, when it comes to clothing... No, it does not cost you that much, comparatively to what you're selling it.
Oh, yeah, but why is it that you can get an iPhone for, like, $65 in some countries?
Well, some of them are bootlegs.
Yeah, but the ones that are real iPhones, like, I've seen them apparently, like, some countries you can get an iPhone for, like, $100.
Damn, that's a good deal, but yeah. I don't like Apple products.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't use Apple stuff. I worked for Apple, so I definitely don't like Apple products.
What if we seize all the factories and then distribute...
What, like those dudes in India that like trashed that Apple factory and took all their shit?
Well, yeah, but you know, let's trash all the factories at the same time.
Yeah, I agree.
She's talking about all of the factories.
Yeah,
I'm talking about a strike.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling all of my listeners, if you haven't seen Elysium, watch it tonight and or watch it whenever you can. And just remember,
that's the future Elon Musk wants.
Yeah, that's the future Elon Musk wants. He wants Total Recall. He wants that kind of stuff. And you know what? We got to stop these people before, like, you know, this gets too crazy. So, you know, find people you believe in and get them to try to run for office.
Yeah.
That's honestly what I'm going to say. Because the thing is, I'm a leftist, But we're not right. You don't change the world with AKs and stuff unless you really need to.
Like, you know, I'm not against all forms of violence. Sometimes violence is a necessary process. Armed revolutions
are a necessary thing, but I do not think we're there. We really can, at this point, we can still turn things around.
Without violence,
if we just find people that just give a shit and don't want to be a political, you know, puppet the rest of their life. We just have to find politicians like that. And there are people in America. I mean, if I had a chance, I would run for, you know, office. I wouldn't care how much, it, you know, how stressful it was and stuff like that. I'd want to help people.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk a lot of bad stuff about Jimmy Stewart. And, you know, I'm sure he would have been a terrible politician. But there's that movie where he played a politician. And it's like, you know, I'm sure he was trying to do something right in that movie. I don't know. It was an old movie. It could have been the most effed up thing ever. That's something else about our country. Like, we change all the damn time. And it's kind of funny because it's like one week we'll be like, oh, yeah, it's cool to, you know, victimize these people. And the next week we're like, oh, wait, that was wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, oh, God, we're so ridiculous. Like, anybody who hasn't watched Revenge of the Nerds in years should totally watch that movie. Like, those guys all belonged in prison.
Yeah, that movie is,
Oh, and there was a kid there. They were letting a kid watch porn with them. Okay,
that's just wrong on so many different levels.
That puts you in jail.
Yeah, because it's a crime.
That is a crime.
Yeah.
That is not only a crime, it's one of those crimes you get locked up, you do years for.
Isn't the whole movie crimes, though?
Yes.
Yeah.
But honestly, like...
Well, that's pretty much the biggest.
Showing a kid porn and raping a woman, I think, are the two worst things they do in that.
Yeah, because she did not know who it was when they started.
Yeah, and that is totally, like, not... like
that is not legal. Anybody who hasn't seen it, basically one of the nerds is wearing a Darth Vader costume that this cheerleader's boyfriend was also wearing, and then he goes and bangs her.
And he starts laughing, and it's like this whole thing where she falls in love with him, and it's like, no, that's not how that works.
Yeah,
that's not how that works.
She did not consent to having sex with you.
Yeah, I mean, like, who does he think he is, Ike Turner?
What, do you think she wants to have sex with some jerk? Or a rapist.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She can have sex with the jerk, or she can have sex with the guy that raped her.
Yeah, God. Like...
that movie.
Yeah, I don't understand what was wrong with people back then to let that fly.
All right, so to wrap it all up, people suck. Old things suck. We need to stop being fascist, and communism wasn't the solution either, so... we got to figure something out where we can get our fancy fish, but people don't starve. I've been Millicent Oriana, and I was joined today by...
Jacob Urban.
And...
Sophia Baca, SciPod Sophia, host of Breaking Math along with other people.
And, of course, I'm Millicent Oriana, and you can always find me at nerdforensics@gmail.com. You can also find me at patreon.com/nerdforensics. You can find Nerd Forensics on Facebook, and you can always reach me on Twitter at CampPodMillie, and that's Camp with a K.